With this crucial election now upon us, I've been thinking a lot about what we've lost during these last 4 years. Nothing showed me that more than a new documentary on the work of President Obama's official photographer, Pete Souza. It's brilliant. And then I remembered this conversation I had with Pete at the Miami Book Fair 2 years ago when we celebrated his new book, Shade, A Tale of Two Presidents. And I could think of nothing better to reprise, hoping that we will see a return to a time when generosity of spirit reigned, a time that he documented so very well. Welcome to The Literary Life, this week with Pete Souza. This is Mitchell Kaplan, and you're listening to Literary Life. Pete Souza is my guest. Pete is appearing at the 35th edition of the Miami Book Fair, and I've just come from one of the more remarkable events that we've ever had at the Book Fair, which is Pete talking about and showing slides from his new book, Shade, A Tale of Two Presidents. Pete, welcome to The Literary Life.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Tell me the origin of this book.
Well, the origin of the book is based on my Instagram feed. The difference is, on my Instagram feed, I don't necessarily tell people what I'm responding to. People have gathered that it's a reaction to a Trump tweet or a story or
the news of the day.
But I make people work and figure out what I'm talking about. In the book, I kind of draw a straight line by including the Trump tweet or news headline that inspired my snarky post in the first place. And so it's kind of laid out there for you to see. And it's, to me, it's a good documentation of the craziness that his Trump's first 500 days was. We so much happens every week, every month, that we need to remember all the crazy stuff that this guy does.
Well, you know, right at the time of Trump's inauguration, about a week later, I went to the doctor, and for the first time in my life, I discovered I had high blood pressure. And clearly, it was from the same kind of shock that you clearly had when he was elected. You gave the most remarkable talk just before coming to speak to us here. And one of the people who came up to ask a question pointed out that you're kind of a ray of light in a very dark period. And even though you're giving shade, this is quite a hopeful book as well. Talk a little bit about that too.
Yeah. You know, there's an MLK quote, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. You know, we're going to get through this time. We've had a lot of worse things happen in our country. This feels really bad. It is bad. But it's not the worst thing our country has ever faced. And we're going to get through this and be okay. And I didn't want people to forget the manner in which President Obama conducted himself and his administration for 8 years. There were no scandals. The way he respected other people, the race, the way he respected the office of the presidency. People can argue policy, and he wasn't perfect, but he was a good man who tried to do good things for all of us, and did it in a respectful way. And we have none of that right now.
And I think that's what clearly comes through. That's what offends you more than anything about
it. Does I mean
what he's done to the office of the president?
Yes, I have said and before that if Jeb Bush or John McCain or Mitt Romney or John Kasich or anybody else had become president, I wouldn't be doing this, because all those guys respected other people, and I know they would have respected the office of the presidency. I may have argued vehemently
policy
with some of their policy decisions, but I know that they would not have disrespected other people or the office.
Well, in fact, you were the White House photographer as well for Ronald Reagan during those years, too.
You know, and I say the same thing about him, that he respected other people and he respected the office. And you can say that, you know, maybe his policies didn't fit what you and I think of as the way things should be done, but at least he was a decent human being.
Yeah.
And you can't say that about Trump.
No, and I think that's really why I got the high blood pressure. It was because the schoolyard bully had taken over the office of the presidency.
Like, I knew those kids in eighth grade and ninth grade. It's just that...
And they shouldn't be president.
He never developed a sense of maturation.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? I mean, he's still
a bully. I mean, and you point this out, and some of your photographs and some of the tweets and where shade comes from. I mean, just recently, for a president of the United States not to go to a Veterans
Day
celebration or service
is
remarkable.
Well, and this is after not going to the 100th anniversary of, you know, commemorating World War I, that he flies all the way to France and then doesn't go to the American Cemetery that he's supposed to because it's raining out.
Yeah.
And he would have had to drive instead of take the helicopter. That's ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, one of the things that was probably one of the most moving parts of your presentation and one of the images that is so moving, it was the frame and then the next frame of President Obama at Walter Reed Hospital with pinning the Purple Heart on a guy that he thought was probably in a coma or something. Explain that one.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually in Afghanistan.
He was actually in Afghanistan.
Yeah, it was at the hospital in Afghanistan.
I didn't realize that.
And this guy was in the ICU, the intensive care unit, and was being awarded the Purple Heart, but was asleep or unconscious. And as the military aide read the citation, President Obama was pinning the Purple Heart on his shirt. And after the citation was read, the doctor that was there with us said to President Obama it would be okay that if he whispered a few words that he was actually awake a couple hours ago. This is somebody that had just been hurt
so
by an IED just hours before and was still at the hospital in Afghanistan before being sent to Walter Reed. And as President was whispering to him, there's this rustle under the sheets. And the Sergeant Hay was his name, still with his eyes closed, but you saw his hand just come up from under the sheets to shake hands with the president. It was just so...
Something nobody else...
Right.
And the fact that that happened and you were able to capture it, it's those of us who are just the general population, we don't understand that circumstances like that also affect policy in some way or another, right? I mean, it's got to stay within President Obama's consciousness of what the effect of all policy actually is.
Yeah, and it's not just numbers.
It's actual people.
It's actual people. And when you make a decision to send people into war, you know that there's a chance that some of them are not going to live or they'll come back wounded. And it's I think probably the hardest decision for any president to make.
It's not a game.
It's not a game. It's real life.
You don't send soldiers down to the border as a stunt the week before the election.
Right. And that's what the current man that occupies the Oval Office does not understand. It's a reality show presidency. That's all it is. It's all about him and ratings and doing things that get him good attention. That's what his presidency is all about, and that's a shame.
Well, and I think the intimacy that you showed in the previous book, which was, you know, President Obama, An Intimate Portrait, which I also recommend highly. These books work so well together. And now that Michelle's book is out, all three of them work very well together, I think.
I'll happily put my books on the same bookshelf as her book. So I'm hoping that you, as a bookshop owner, do that too.
The window is already there. The window is already there. But I think that the intimacy of the portrait, I mean, I was, listening to you, and I was just sort of sad for us that we had to go from that kind of a person to where we are now. But I think you ended it so hopefully that there is another generation coming up. And I think these midterms, were very hopeful. Is that your feeling as well?
Yeah, I mean, the initial reports on the midterms were people were sort of lukewarm about the results. I just think it's, the Democrats gained close to 40 seats in the House. They won a big open Republican Senate seat. They took that seat. There more than 100 women were elected to Congress. And state legislatures across the country did well. Progressive guy in Texas got more than 4 million votes and almost won. And, I don't know about here in Florida. It does show you that the country still is divided, as is the state of Florida.
Yeah.
And how important it is for everybody to get out and vote. And, we had a 17-year-old kid tonight that attended my talk and was going to be voting for the first time in 2020.
Give out that hashtag that you had about 2020.
Vote him out 2020. Right.
November 3rd, I
November
remember.
November 2nd or 3rd, yeah. I can't even remember which one it is.
To change the subject a little bit, how does one become a White House photographer?
I think there's no blueprint for it. Here's the five-step process.
How did it happen with you?
Yeah, for me it was a matter of luck, in the sense that when Barack Obama was elected to the Senate in 2004, I was working for the Chicago Tribune based in Washington, D.C., and one of the reporters in the bureau and myself embarked on a series of articles of his first year in the Senate. And because we were his quote-unquote hometown paper, we got access to him that other national outlets didn't. And when you're a photographer and you need access, you're in his intimate spaces. So as a result, he got to see how I worked, got to see that I took my job seriously. We developed a professional relationship. That's all it was at the time. And but I think as a result of him getting to know me a little bit, in that capacity, that when he was elected president, he asked me to become his photographer.
Did you cover any of his book tours when he was writing at the time, when some of his books came out?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Before he was president.
I didn't cover his book tour at all. It's possible I maybe went to one event. I can't remember. But I did. I went to five countries with him as senator. Wow. Went to Russia, Azerbaijan, and Ukraine. He went with Richard Lugar, the senator from Indiana, a Republican. And they were inspecting dismantled nuclear weapons and biological weapons. And then on another trip, went to Kenya and South Africa with him. His family came at least on the Kenya portion of the trip. Went to his grandmother's village. And so just result of those kinds of experiences with him is how I first got to know him a little bit.
Would you agree with me that, because you know him so intimately and I don't, but there doesn't seem to be any artifice to him. You know, what you see is really who he is. Is that pretty true?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people don't...
He's got to put something on.
I mean, I think that, people probably don't see that he does have a really good sense of humor. I mean, they've seen that at times, but you sort of see that more maybe behind the scenes, and he's very competitive, as I showed a couple pictures that relate to that in my presentation. And you know, and he does, like anybody, he gets, you know, mad occasionally, and he doesn't show that publicly that much. You know, even I sort of made the point too that he had this very even tempered disposition, which, you know, it would just take a lot to rile him up.
And he has the opposite of what we have now. He doesn't seem narcissistic at all, you know, in that sense. I'm sure his ego is well developed.
Right. I mean, but you have to have an ego to run.
But, you know, we had an experience here at the book fair with him. Prior to him running with the second book, he came and did an event at the book fair, just as you did. And he was just contemplating whether or not he should run. It was, I think he announced in January, the book fair was in November. And he came and he was pre-signing books. And I was in the room with him for probably about a half an hour, feeding him books as a bookseller. And he came with no aid. He came with no driver. He just sort of came on his own. And no advanced person or anything like that. And all he wanted to do while he was signing the book is he wanted to go have a cigarette and find out where he could watch the Michigan State football game. Does that sound like in keeping with who he might be?
Yeah. Although he did quit cold turkey smoking.
Yeah, well, at that time at the White House.
Yeah, no, I know. He liked to have a cigarette every once in a while. And he's very much of a sports fanatic. And I mean, the times that I would go, well, he would work in the residence at night by himself every night. I mean, for 4 or 5 hours. Sometimes he'd be up till 2 o'clock in the morning reading his briefing books, making calls. He read 10 letters from ordinary Americans every night and responded to those. So he did his homework every night. But oftentimes, if I would go upstairs to the residence to photograph him doing something or other in that office in the residence, there'd be a game on.
Of course.
You know, sometimes the sound wouldn't even be on. You know, while he was doing his work, he would be glancing up at the game.
Right. Well, and the upshot of that thing was that we went, and there were about 3,000 people who showed up for him. He was questioning, you know, whether Florida would really go for him. And I remember him, as he walked off stage and he had a standing ovation, he turned and he said, "I guess Florida might be in play for me," which was great. It gave us such hope. And that's, I think, what you pick up so much in this book. We forget that we've moved into a dark period, and you bring us out of that dark period. Talk about how you came up with the title, Shade. It's a great story.
Well, what I started doing on Instagram led to a bunch of stories in newspapers and magazines. The headlines of these stories were often something like, you know, former Obama photographer throws shade at Trump. And I didn't really know what that meant. I knew what I was doing. I knew some people called it trolling, but I didn't know the term throwing shade. And then, you know, so I actually looked it up and said to myself, yeah, that's what I'm doing, which is sort of like making snarky comments about other people. And then I actually wanted to entitle the book Throwing Shade, and my book editor said, no, everybody knows what just shade means.
Well, you brought it to people's attention more than anyone else, because I didn't know it either, really. I had heard it, but I didn't know it until you started doing it. You know, we're very fortunate down here, at least we've been for many, many years. The Miami Herald has always had a really great photojournalism team, going to Haiti, going to cover wars in Central and Latin America. Talk about the importance of photojournalism, if you can.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's happening in this day and age is newspapers are having less and less budgets to keep a good photo staff intact. And I think it's adversely affecting newspapers all around the country. But there are some that still have their core group of photojournalists that are often doing really good work, just in terms of issues of today. I mean, you look at in the last week, just the unbelievable pictures that are coming out of the fires in California.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, we now have a president who lies about the news constantly, and oftentimes tries to scare people with the news. Let's take this caravan of people in Central America moving their way through Mexico. Why are they leaving their countries? Because of political violence and poverty and corruption, and they're just seeking a better life for their family. And instead, we have a president who tries to scare people into thinking that they're going to cross our border and murder our children, essentially, is what he's saying. He's saying there's Middle Easterners, bad Middle Easterners.
Right.
And photojournalists that are covering that caravan are showing us the people that are actually in the caravan, which is a lot of women and young children. It's not a group that are of people who are wanting to come into our country to wreak havoc on our citizens. It's ridiculous.
Completely.
They're seeking asylum because of the conditions in their own country.
Well, journalism has never been more important, and photojournalism now is such truth telling.
Yeah.
Picture what the cliche, the picture is worth a thousand words, right? How did you get started in photography at all? Did you study it in school or?
Yeah, well, I actually went to Boston University with the hopes of becoming a sports writer. So I was in their communications school, and then in my junior year, I took a photography class, and I think probably the first roll of film I developed and then made a print in the darkroom, and the image magically appeared under those red safe lights in the tray of developer. This is old school days of developing your own black and white film. It was magic to me. And I knew right away this was something I wanted to do. I didn't know if I could be successful at it. It took me a long time to get to the point where I was any good. But it was really the first thing in my life that really spoke to me as this is what I want to do.
Did you hook on with a newspaper pretty quickly?
Not quickly, no. It took me like 5 years before I got to the point where I was any good, where I got a job at a newspaper.
As a general, did you work sports or did you general photography?
Yeah, no, general photography at two small papers in Kansas, then at the Chicago Sun-Times. Did some sports, but it was general assignments. So it was news, features, sports.
Were there some photographers that influenced you in some particular way or people you admire?
Yeah, no, there's definitely people that I admire. I think early on, I was so ignorant of other photographers. I didn't really know any because I hadn't really studied it at all. But then over the years, there's definitely people that I looked up to, including a guy by the name of Yoshi Okamoto, who was LBJ's White House photographer. And was really the first White House photographer, official White House photographer, that truly documented a president for history. Up until that point, it was very hit or miss.
Right.
I mean, Kennedy had two military photographers, but they didn't document everything that Kennedy did in terms of like even the official stuff. It was more ceremonial stuff, but they weren't in there in all the sit room meetings and things like that. So it was very sporadic, their coverage of his presidency. And then when Okamoto came in with LBJ, he was the one who was just nonstop, always there photographing LBJ, every meeting, every social event. And I think that anybody that's done my job since then has tried to like live up to bar that he set.
Did that continue with Nixon? And did Nixon have his own...
Nixon had his own photographer, but did not really give his...
access.
His photographer good access at all.
And you talked a little bit about the access you had. And
my access with President Obama was incredible. I think it was at the same sort of level as Okamoto. They were completely two different
people.
I mean, you know, LBJ was a crude individual in a lot of ways, and some of Okamoto's pictures are just so incredible because they're, you know, it's LBJ in bed, you know, with his aides there taking notes as he's you know, that's not the kind of picture that President Obama would allow me to be there for. I mean, there wouldn't be any aide in his bedroom right. when he's in bed.
Or on the toilet.
On the toilet. But I did have incredible access to President Obama and everything that he did. And and you know, but for me, Okamoto will always be the guy that really...
That sort of kicked off this idea.
I think he more than
you.
Kicked it off.
No,
I think
but I mean
he,
for you as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how did that job with Reagan come about?
Yeah, that was another like sort of lucky situation. Someone that I had known professionally in my days in Kansas. She had been the director of photography at the Kansas City Star, became the White House photo editor. And Michael Levins, who was Reagan's chief photographer, was looking for someone to work with him. And Carol Greenewald was her name. She suggested me to Michael. And so it was just one of those
You were very
things.
Young at the time.
I was in my 20s.
Yeah. That's quite an opportunity.
Yeah.
And the world changed so much during his presidency as well.
Yeah.
Must have been kind of remarkable. If you can, I'd love to end this on a really upbeat, positive note. And you have it all laid out in your book where you write, "What comes next?" Do you mind reading that a little bit? Or reading the whole thing? It's not very long.
You know, originally, this was the end of my introduction.
Oh, really?
And then I decided that we should put this at the back of the book. So you've gone through all the pictures in the book and my... captions, and here's how I end it. What comes next? Throwing shade is one thing, but it's time for us to take the next step. It's not enough to voice disbelief at what's taking place. Let's use our energy to do something about it. Vote, for one. Help others get to the polls. March in the streets for issues that are important to you. Write or call your congressperson about how you feel. It all matters. It may take a while. But let's bring respect back to the Oval Office. Let's bring respect back to our country. As Abraham Lincoln said at Gettysburg, our task is that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Pete, thanks so much for the important work that you do, and thanks so much for being here as well.
Thanks for having me on.